Today, baby boomers' monetary policy. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. What's my latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian and New Zealand flavour. Today I'm joined again by Joe Wilkes, property expert from New Zealand. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Martin. How you doing?
Very good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Very good. You had a good week.
Yeah, very busy week. A lot going on here. A lot of noise about quantitative easing, home prices, and the fact that consumer confidence is through the floor. Pretty amazing times, really.
Yeah, well, we're seeing some interesting stuff over here, and to be fair, I've had quite an interesting week. I've had a couple of phone calls from friends that getting in touch, and I just thought I'd use the opportunity today to just to see whether or not our audience would have any appetite in New Zealand for a little road trip.
Okay.
Because last Sunday I had a very, very quick conversation with Mr. John Adams saying that he would like to come over.
Okay. The Adams invasion. Very good.
Yeah, well, John was proposing maybe doing a series of talks, a couple in Auckland, a couple possibly in Wellington, and then maybe visit Christchurch as well over a week, probably early next year, just because of my diary. After I said, yes, that sounds like a good idea, I then thought we better go and see if there's any appetite for us actually doing some speaking around the country. So I'll just put it out there at the beginning of this recording. If people would like John to come over, please say, yes, we'd be interested in coming and seeing a talk. On Tuesday, I then got a little bonus phone call from Robbie Barwick, who said that he'd also like to join us. So again, if you think that me, John and Robbie might be worth listening to, and it's something you'd be interested in, please just make a little comment at the bottom, and we'll decide from that whether it's worth us doing.
Okay. All right. Out to the audience. Anyone in New Zealand who thinks that this is a good idea, let us know. And if there's enough interest, then we'll pursue it.
Sounds good. Thanks very much for that plug to start off with. We've had another week in politics and financial markets, and there's all sorts happening out there in the wider world. Read some really interesting stuff about the extent of MySpace's acquisition of property for shared office dwelling around London and New York, and just the amount of purchasing that they've been doing over the last 3 years relative to the volumes of transactions. And given that they may be living on a bit of a credit momentum, it was quite astonishing the extent of which they've been dominating the market and also acting as that marginal buyer in the commercial space. Over here in New Zealand, we've had the Crown accounts have been released. So Grant Robertson has had a fillip of a $7 billion surplus in the Crown accounts for the year, which he's decided not to spend just yet. I think he's still sort of nudging his mate, the Reserve Bank Governor Orr, to see if, between the two of them, they can set some policy that will suit the baby boomers.
Okay. Yeah. So is that the first time they've reported a surplus, or have you been running surpluses up till now?
Now, we've run a couple of surpluses over the last couple of years. So we're reducing the amount of government debt to GDP, which now sits at around 18%. If you look back at Ireland's situation in 2006, they'd managed to get debt to GDP down to around 19%, which was largely based off the growth in the credit momentum. So we've seen the credit momentum this year has increased in the building side of the economy. So that's a large part of our credit growth. We are seeing a slowdown in the credit impulse when it comes to the acquisition of property to live in. And these are, I suppose, things that the government will be looking at quite seriously, because we did it last year, but 2020 is that first year when we start to see the big increase in the number of baby boomers hitting retirement. So for 1955 birth year, that's going to start getting bigger and bigger and bigger over the next few years. And it's a really weird policy, because we're cutting interest rates on one front, which puts pressure on fixed incomes and term deposits and all of that. But I think that the real reason that they're doing it is to try and get people who have got a bit of cash savings to then go and take on more debt, and that's to get back into the property market and get people considering investment and a debt funded investment in property as an alternative to drive cash in retirement. So we touched on the RBNZ lending figures for August in our last post, and saying how they had dropped off relative to August last year. But delving into it in a bit more detail, you can actually see that the big impact that we've got within the credit market and the housing market here is that previously, and really going through 13, 14, 15 and 16, the investors made up a really heavy portion of new lending flows. Now, the August data, when you actually drill it down, the August data for 2019, there was just over $1 billion lent to investors. I think it was $1,023,000 lent into the investment market. In comparison, that number was $1.98 billion back in 2015. So the lending to investors has almost halved, and that's why I think we're going to see some quite unusual changes to the macroprudential toolkit that Mr. Orr has when he goes next month. And one, I still think we're going to see a cut in the cash rate. So I'm expecting a quarter of a point. I think it'd be unlikely they go a full half point. But the financial stability report, which is actually the end of November next year, don't be surprised. End of this year. End of next month, November. But don't be surprised if we see some changes to the LVR rules. So there have been caps on lending to investors. It was 40%. It was dropped to 30%. And I think that we're going to see a further cut in that in November. Just a guess, because they're desperate to keep this momentum going.
So that basically means that people can get an investment property with a smaller deposit. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that I think is, it's not baked in, but it seems to me to be the one thing that they will be thinking of, because they don't have any idea how to stimulate an economy without growing the credit momentum.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's same old over here, right, with regards to trying to pull that lever. And unfortunately, in the Australian context, pretty much the cupboard is bare with regard to other things that are going on, because the consumer confidence is very low, business confidence is very low, and now we're seeing the iron ore price come off. So essentially, the government is using the housing sector and debt as essentially the lever they've got. The trouble is, it's not necessarily working that well at the moment, because although the new credit flows here was up a bit, the total amount of credit in the system is not growing anything like it was. And that's because I think confidence is still pretty weak. And I suspect that people will see through some of these strategies, like the rate cuts and those sorts of things, right? People are asking more hard questions, which is, but what does this really mean? And, how is this really going to play out? So perhaps people are moving beyond just the, low rates, whoopee, I'll go buy, and asking more serious and very important questions.
Yeah, well, I think that there is a much better education out there, and people are trying to find and seek this information. I was impressed that over here in New Zealand, we had a Reserve Bank review into the future of cash. Now, for a little country, we managed to get 2,800 submissions in for that. I'm not sure how many of those submissions were from our DFA watchers, but that was quite a good numbers relative to the number of submissions you had in Australia about cash ban. And also relative to the size of the population. So for those that are seeking information, they're finding it, and they're now starting to create a little bit of noise. You are seeing a few more articles in the paper. I saw an article again this week about what happens in a negative cash rate environment. So those questions are, they're starting to be questioned. And I think that for me, it's good to see more younger people taking an interest in this, because it is the younger people that are bearing the burden. It is the younger people that have been targeted. We looked at our Are You Being Enticed Into the Property Market post last year, and just that switch of how the bank's focus on propaganda had moved away from the investment sector to the first-time buyer sector. Last 3 months, first-time buyers have been responsible for over 17% of the new money lent. So, and that's come off from where they were back in 2015, where it was about 9.5%. Now, my concern is that I still don't believe that the loan to that, sorry, the loan numbers relative to the transactional volumes match up. And I do think that we are we're understating the size of total household exposure. I don't know if you saw an article from ANZ over in Australia this week. They're talking about they're going to look to limit the size of loans to 9 times household income.
I know. I'm thinking you were making loans above that previously. Wow.
I know, and I have no doubt that we'll have people, particularly in Auckland. If you look at, you know, the average price to income is around 10 times, times income. So I think that we have seen that here as well. But how clear is this monetary policy? Or, you know, are we really seeing the transparency that the younger generation need to make sensible decisions moving forward?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things people need to understand is that there is an agenda, right? And it's an agenda that is being partly driven by the financial markets and, you know, the large international banks. And it goes like this, right? They have very large holdings of bonds, right? And they're holding those bonds on the assumption that later interest rates will be lower, which means that the price on the bond will go up, which means they'll make a mozza, right? And these same organizations are now, you know, roaring for quantitative easing, low rates, et cetera, right? And so effectively what they're doing is they're talking the book, because what they're doing is essentially exerting pressure on central banks around the world to take rates lower. And as they do more quantitative easing and take rates lower, these banks will make a large return from those bond holdings. Now, that's the real agenda, right? And what's fascinating to me is that the Fed this last week basically said, no, we're not doing that, all right? Because now what they're doing is essentially not using quantitative easing strategies down the yield curve, but they're actually focusing on short-term T-bills, which are actually not being held by most large players. So there's an interesting game of cat and mouse going on here between the regulators, you know, the central banks, and the financial markets. But every time you hear one of the big banks around the world advocating for lower interest rates, quantitative easing and those things, remember, they have got positions and they will benefit.
Yeah, and it's you could almost say the same about your house price indices over in Australia this week. And I've questioned CoreLogic's impartiality in the past, just because when you actually look at who the shareholders are, some of the major shareholders are actually the American investment houses. So BlackRock, large shareholder in CoreLogic, Vanguard Capital as well, large shareholder. So there is a conflict of interest. These guys, they want credit growth. They want to see that credit momentum going up. And I thought it was hilarious, John's not attack, questioning of the impartiality of the CoreLogic house price index this week.
Yeah, well, you know, there is an interesting question to be had, because, you know, we've now got another equally reputable organisation saying, well, we're not seeing some of the same growth that CoreLogic is rewarding. You know, there is some movement at top end of the market, et cetera, et cetera. I just think we need to have more transparency about this whole issue of those indices, which are, you know, not publicly funded, they're not publicly validated. They are effectively industry information published by people with agendas. And yet they are quoted religiously as though they're somehow, you know, magically 100% right. So all I'm saying, and I think John's saying the same, is we need to be told, you know, we need to understand more about how these indices are actually developed, what the information flows are, where they come from, and, you know, frankly, what the underlying agendas are, because there are agendas below the surface that people should be aware of.
Yeah, and that, you know, the data that's published is often very sort of overview rather than actually getting granular on individual areas. I used to have the same issue with the Halifax House Price Index in the UK, because we'd see things that were you know, obviously happening in the market, and we were dealing with transactions at the coalface, and the Halifax House Price Index would be saying absolutely nothing. In fact, you know, there were times where we'd have had 10% come off a market over an 8 or 12 month period, and yet the Halifax House Price Index was flat. So, you know, again, Halifax lending money and are a mortgage lender. Maybe we've got similar challenges over here.
Yeah, well, again, as you say, when you take averages, and particularly on very low volumes, which is what we've got at the moment, the fact is that you could well have some distortions there, right? And, you know, on the low volumes. We know that there's a bit of a momentum at the top end of the market in a few postcodes, but my granular analysis is suggesting that actually if you go down to units and if you look in the urban fringe and those new building areas where there are thousands and thousands and thousands of properties built, still being built now, right? There is no price recovery that I can see in those areas. So again, it's a matter of interpreting the information appropriately. But the trouble is we don't know where that information has come from and how it's actually being created. So effectively, we are reliant on, you know, the limited amount of contextual discussion that there is about what the data is doing, and people just getting fixated on the information that's published. And of course, it's published in all the mainstream media, and it's you know, the headline news on a Saturday night: auction clearance rates and prices, etc. I just think it's a bit like, you know, the stock indices. They don't tell you much either. I sometimes think we're over-indexed as a culture around the world. Sometimes perhaps we should understand a little bit more about how these indices are actually running. But more importantly, yeah. What is it there for, and, you know, what is the true agenda behind it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to see some cuts again in November. I think we're going to see a relaxation of the loan-to-value restrictions, on particularly on these investors, because of the amount of lending that they're responsible for has dropped off a cliff over the last 4 years. Will it be enough? I'm not sure. It's going to put a pressure on the first-home buyers who are saving money and trying to do it safely through term deposits and those savings. So you will be removing a pool of buyers at the same extent. We have got now government home loan grants being kicked off. There's $400 billion been announced to go and help people get into shared equity ownership. So what we predicted a few months ago, yeah, that's good. We'll throw that in as well. there aren't really any surprises at the moment. It's almost like you could look at the playbook and say, yeah, this is exactly the same playbook that we've seen elsewhere. We touched on the the allowing parents of recent immigrants to come into the country to boost numbers of people. Everything that you've seen before, we're seeing again. And the UK experience from 2008-09 onwards, interest rates got cut down to 0.5% or down to 0.25%. What people probably don't realise is that over that period, we actually had net migration flows in excess of 350,000 per year. So the following 10 years, there's another 3 million people that were added to the country. So it was a population QE, I think one of our commentators called it. So those things, those lessons, they haven't been learned. They're being repeated now in the Southern Hemisphere, which is 10 years later.
Yeah, well, it's often the case that things happen a bit delayed down here, right? But you're right, the playbook is so similar. And I suspect the outcomes will also be somewhat similar insofar that if you look at, savings rates in the UK, they're zero pretty much. Property prices, well, they did go up a bit, they dropped and then went up, but they're now sort of wobbling sideways. And to an extent, if you look in some areas, they're actually going backwards. But they've still got the same housing affordability questions there in the UK now. There are lots of people who can't get into the market. And you've still got, rife speculation. And, of course, more recently, the UK had to tighten back all of the investment lending quadrant of the market, as it were, because they were worried that it was running up at 16% of total loans. 16%? Right? I wish. Remember that we're at 30 plus in both New Zealand and Australia. So you think they got a problem? We've definitely got a problem too.
Yeah, well, fun times ahead. Fun times ahead. We'll keep watching it and keep seeing what happens.
Yeah, Joe, I appreciate your time once again today. See you later.
Good to see you, Mark. Take care.
Cheers. So there you have it. A very important message from Joe Wilkes, I think. Look at the UK, look at their playbook, and realise that we're following suit. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.